Stubbornly optimistic, Jeb Bush, despite disappointing poll numbers, pressing on, pursuing the Republican presidential nomination. A conversation with former Florida Governor Jeb Bush on this edition of Iowa Press.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a dad.
I am a mom.
I'm a kid.
I'm a kid at heart.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. The availability of high-speed broadband service is essential to fulfilling the promise of a connected Iowa. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign showcases the importance of delivering broadband to all corners of Iowa. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com. Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.
For decades, Iowa Press has brought you politicians and newsmakers from across Iowa and beyond. Now celebrating more than 40 years of broadcast excellence on statewide Iowa Public Television. This is the Friday, December 4 edition of Iowa Press. Here is Dean Borg.
Jeb Bush's roots run deep in Texas and Florida. He was born in Texas, graduated Phi Beta Kappa from the University of Texas with a degree in Latin American Affairs. After a couple of years managing a U.S. bank branch in Venezuela, he was back working on his father's presidential campaign, but he didn't become in politics himself until the mid-1980s after moving to Florida. First appointed Florida's Commerce Secretary, then running for governor, losing the first election, but later serving two terms as governor. Now seeking the Republican presidential nomination. Governor Bush, welcome to Iowa Press.
Great to be with you.
And I didn't know until I was doing some research, I've always wondered what Jeb stands for, and it's the initials of your name.
John Ellis Bush. I'm really pleased my parents got creative at right in the moment of truth, and they came up with my name when I was born. Jeb's a great name for all sorts of reasons. Not many people have it. It's short. It easy sits on a bumper sticker pretty good. There's a lot of good reasons why I like it.
I'd like to introduce you to the two journalists across the table, Associated Press political writer Catherine Lucy and Radio Iowa's news director Kay Henderson.
Governor, this year it appears that voters are choosing folks like Trump and Carson and Rubio and Cruz who have very little, if any, political experience. Was this the wrong year for a two-term governor to seek the presidency?
I don't think so. I think when we get closer to this, that the decision will be made by voters really on the following things. Do you have ideas that will make my life better? Do you have the fortitude, the leadership skills to make it happen? You can have that leadership can be acquired in the private sector or through government. And do you care about me? Do you care about the condition that I'm in? And look, my life experience is 32 years in business, 8 years as a reform-minded governor. I think over time that kind of skill set that I've acquired through my life experience will be helpful to me for sure.
I've heard you say that you're campaigning with joy in your heart. You talk about being optimistic about the future. Voters seem to be angry among the Republican electorate. Have you figured out what they want?
They're angry because we're on the wrong track. You look at the polling numbers, and we are persistently, as Americans, believing we're on the wrong track, left and right. And people are frustrated and angry. And my case is, look, you can have someone appeal to your fears and your angst, and nothing will happen, or you can vote for someone and support someone who actually has a plan to fix the things that you're angry about.
But that brings up a question. Are you angry enough?
I don't have to be angry. I have to understand why people are angry. Look, I believe we're in the greatest country in the face of the earth. I'm not going to change who I am just because I have to. I'm not going to be a faux candidate. I'm not going to fake people out. I believe if we fix a few big, complex things, this is the most extraordinary time to be alive. And I'm not going to change that, but I do think it's important to understand why people are angry. You can connect with them on that level, but look, politics has never been about, you never win by saying end is near. Name a candidate in national office that won saying world's coming to an end, vote for me. Talking at the end of the day, you got to offer a compelling alternative to the path we're on.
Talking about trying to connect with people, though, your campaign and the super PAC supporting you have spent tens of millions of dollars at this point on television ads trying to boost your candidacy. And so far, you remain in low single digits in the polls. When does something need to change for you?
We got 60 days for Iowa, and the first four primary states in February were well organized. You know full well in Iowa, it's a question of organization. In New Hampshire, it's retail politics. In South Carolina, a great organization matters. I'm making great progress in those states, and we have the best campaign in Nevada. So, look, you in October or November of, even in December of the last two election cycles, the people that were winning in December weren't the ones that ended up winning. It's just the nature of the beast, and you know, there's no reason to rewrite history. People make up their minds late.
Of course, we're here in Iowa, but you're putting more offices and staff in New Hampshire at the moment. Is Iowa a lost cause?
No, it isn't. We have the best organization here in Iowa of any of the campaigns. This is my third day in the state on this trip. We're making really good progress here.
You said in Waterloo earlier this week that you might not have chosen to attend the climate change conference in Paris.
Yeah.
Why not, when so many other world leaders were there?
Because I don't know what the plan is. I don't know what they're proposing. I worry about these international agreements that aren't enforceable, where the United States is committed to do X, Y, and Z, and other countries there's no enforcement requirement. I worry about hollowing out our industrial core. I worry about working people having higher costs imposed on them by the elites. I worry about all that. So to validate a plan that I have no knowledge of, I'm not necessarily prepared to do.
But do you think the United States needs to reduce emissions?
We are. We've reduced emissions by 10% in the last decade, not because of anything Barack Obama's done. It's because of the natural gas revolution that's taken place, and because people are conserving and consuming less energy in general, all of which is great, but it has nothing to do with imposed solutions from up above.
And is that enough?
10% reduction? It's better than any other country in the industrialized world, and it could continue on for sure. Look, the climate is changing. It's partially due to man, of course, but there's no, you know, the science is conclusive, and you know, it's always the terminology used about what the impacts of this are. That's not true. We're going to lose our way of life to deal with something that may have an impact 50 years from now. I just reject out of hand.
On a related issue, this week the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency issued its decision on the renewable fuel standard.
Yep.
Was that the right decision?
I think they should be a lot more concise and clear, and give farmers and ethanol producers greater certainty about what the market's going to look like over the next 3 or 4 years. So the 17 proposal for ethanol it's still a work in progress. And people have to plan for this. So put aside the actual numbers that they have proposed, which are relatively close to the statutory amount below, which was disappointing for farmers here. It's the lack of certainty that I think EPA gets a failing grade on.
Take you back to Paris for just a moment.
Yeah.
What happened there a couple of weeks ago has implications and actions now in Syria and the Middle East.
Absolutely.
Would you be doing more than just putting special forces, increased numbers of special forces into the Middle East?
I would. I think we need a complete strategy. If I'm president of the United States, the first thing I would do is ask the military for options, not tell them what constraints would be imposed on them, but options to destroy ISIS and to bring about regime change as it relates to Assad. And that would require, I think, a no-fly zone, zones inside of Syria, safe zones for both refugees and the creation of a well-trained army that would be supported by the Arab world and the United States. And it would require more than just air power for the United States. We would have to have, we would have to lead. Now, the idea, the president is correct, I think, in putting special operators on the ground there, but it's not really in the form of a strategy. It's basically one-off ideas that don't create a strategy. And he talks about containing ISIS as though that is a strategy. Well, that's a strategy for failure.
What about ground troops? Putting U.S. ground troops, not some sort of coalition from the region, but honest U.S. military soldiers on the ground.
I think we're going to need to have a military presence if we're going to get an international force, which is essentially what we need to do. We can't do this alone. And it has to be with a strategy of dealing with the end result. Assume we're successful in taking out ISIS, we can't just depart. Hillary Clinton brags about Libya being a great example of smart power. And when we led from behind and basically provided support for our European allies, the net result was there was no plan in place to create a stable Libya afterwards. And now we have ISIS and other forms of terrorist groups in Libya that are destabilizing North Africa. So there has to be a clear strategy going forward, and I think that does require more than just air power for the United States.
Keep troops there for decades?
No. You could have some force. If we had 5,000 to 10,000 troops in Iraq, we probably wouldn't have had ISIS. We've had troops in Korea. We've had troops in Japan. We've had troops in Europe. So I can't prejudge what the end result would be. But clearly, we need to have a stable situation. And I think it has to be driven by the neighborhood more than by the United States.
Speaking about the situation with fighting terrorism, shortly after 9/11, President George W. Bush made a speech saying, "Islam is peace." Do you agree with that statement?
Yeah, for the great majority of practitioners, it is a peaceful religion. It's been co-opted by radical terrorists that have turned it into a political ideology, for sure. And I think it's okay, if you're getting to the next question, which is, it's okay to call it radical Islamic terrorism. The idea that these President Obama and Hillary Clinton and others are tortured to be able to avoid actually calling it what it is, I think is ridiculous. I mean, we're not insulting peace-loving practitioners of the Muslim faith, the Islamic faith, by calling ISIS a group of Islamic terrorists.
But a lot of your competitors are talking about things like tracking Muslims, references to
comparing
refugees. Not a
lot. You're talking about Donald Trump,
well,
and he's wrong.
Comparing refugees to dogs. Do you think this kind of rhetoric is appropriate?
No.
And what does this say about the Republican Party?
It says that we have some candidates that are trying to get attention the wrong way. We're running for the presidency of the United States. It's a serious job and requires serious candidates that offer serious plans. And I don't think that refugees are dogs. That's ridiculous. And I don't think that we should be tracking people unless there is well-founded evidence that people are preparing to attack us.
Should
and that's
Donald
the job
Trump
of the FBI.
For some of the statements he's been
Excuse
making?
Me?
Should Donald Trump apologize?
Look, he's not going to apologize for anything. He's not a serious person, and he's not, therefore, it's hard to imagine him being president of the United States. He gets upset, and he's going to start disparaging our allies. The Syria example is perhaps the classic one, where he first says, let ISIS take out Assad, let them fight themselves first, then let ISIS take out Assad, then let Russia take out ISIS, and now he's saying, just let Russia do this, as though Russia has as an interest taking out ISIS. They have no interest in that. They're there to support their ally and to maintain a growing presence in the Middle East. This lack of seriousness is a serious problem for our country. If a guy capable as he is as a politician became president and has no clue what he's doing, that's a dangerous thing.
Well, let me ask you, if he becomes the nominee, would you support him?
I've pledged to support the nominee, but I have total confidence that the Republican primary voters are not going to support Donald Trump as the nominee.
Okay. Let's turn to what many are referring to as a case of domestic terrorism. There was a shooting outside a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado. What measures do you support that would keep guns away from folks who are mentally ill? And would you support universal background checks for all gun purchases?
No, I don't. And I don't think this is that there is some effort to equate what happened, the tragedy in Colorado, with ISIS, for example. It's not even close. There's a caliphate the size of Indiana with 30,000 battle-tested Islamic terrorists that want to destroy Western civilization. It's a far cry from a deranged person who sadly killed people in a clinic. It's totally two different things. I don't think universal background checks is the solution. But I do think we need to have a much better effort to create awareness when people have mental health challenges. At a minimum, if there's some intervention in the mental health communities, in the mental health networks, there should be some way to protect privacy rights and all the things that people are concerned about, but also make sure that the databases that states have are aware of their illnesses so that they don't have access to guns. On the larger issue, it seems to me the one consistent problem that we see with these horrific acts of violence is that people are totally deranged and they spiral out of control and there's no intervention in their lives. Basically, in the world we live in, you can go into the internet and have all of your crazy views be validated and spiral out of control. And somehow, as a society, we need to figure out how we can reconnect with one another so that we can avoid these things.
In the wake of this shooting, some critics are saying that the Republican rhetoric against Planned Parenthood has become too heated. Do you agree with that? Does there need to be any kind of change?
I haven't seen any rhetoric that's been too heated, but I don't know every utterance of every candidate. I know in my case, I defunded Planned Parenthood. I find it horrific that they were selling body parts. I find it absolutely horrific, and I've expressed my views that way, but hopefully not in a way that incited anybody to be that was crazy to take the violent act.
You don't think the rhetoric, to follow up on, has gone too far?
I haven't seen any rhetoric that would lead me to believe that.
Kate?
There seems to be a pretty stark divide in this country between Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, I've noticed.
Is the country veering toward being ungovernable because of that?
It's an interesting question. I think we are. I know. Look, we've had 240 years of existence, and we've had a bad 10 years, maybe. I don't know. There probably was some food fights in the 19th century that I'm not aware of. But a great majority of the time, and we've been divided in the past, there have been leaders that have forged consensus to allow us to go forward. And I think that is the first priority of the next president, is to not assume that people that disagree with you are bad people. Because the minute you start doing that, the impulse is to push them down to make yourself look better. We've had 7 long years of that, and it doesn't work. And then the president feels compelled to act with authority he may not even have in the Constitution through executive orders, and that just creates the divide even bigger. We have to start getting back to kind of regular order way of how our democracy is supposed to work. And it starts with the premise that you can do this, you can disagree with people with civility and respect. It's not a question of weakness when you stand on your principle, but do it in a way that respects the other person's point of view. I mean, today in Washington, even when they agree, they don't. I mean, there's the reauthorization of the K-12 law is going to happen, I think, today, I think.
No and Child Left Behind.
No, well, it's the ESAA or whatever it's called. But, yeah, No Child Left Behind, simpler to remember. Yeah. And that's one of the few examples where left and right came together to pass. I don't know if the president's going to sign it into law, but there's so few examples because even when there's agreement, they don't move forward.
There's a new book out this week about the Republican Party and some of these challenges. And one of the things in there, it says that earlier this year, your brother told you to say what you needed to say in response to questions about the Iraq War earlier this year. What other advice has he given you?
First of all, that book is crap.
Why
you know, so? You guys are journalists, and you know it when you see it.
Did this not happen?
There's no sources to any of this stuff. There's no. I mean, look, this is the world we're in now, where people tabloid journalism is passing for the kind of journalism that you all have practiced in your careers.
As it relates to my brother, he has given me good advice.
My brother has given me really good advice, and most of it is just to stick with it, be patient. It's a long process, and just be who you are and focus, and be optimistic and be strong.
This past week, more of Secretary Clinton's emails were released to the public.
One of which
had some commentary on the caucus process, saying that it brings out the party's extremes. Do you agree?
No, I don't. I also found it amusing. She had nicknames for Mitt Romney and Newt Gingrich. A lot of spare time apparently when you're Secretary of State to be able to focus on politics. And meanwhile, back at the ranch, we had big pressing problems that she didn't have access to communicating with the ambassador to Libya, for example. So no, I don't think that the caucuses are related to people of the extreme show up. I think that's just ludicrous. I think she's a little bitter because she lost every caucus when she ran against Barack Obama because she was out-organized. The caucuses are a great tool for organization. You can't win the caucuses unless you're really dedicated to getting people to come out. You know, it's, what is it, Monday night, 7 to 8:30 or something like that. That requires a total commitment and requires a solid grassroots effort. And
as I think long as we're healthy. Talking about the caucuses, how do you view the Iowa caucuses? Up front in our discussion here, you said you named some other states and we're well organized in those states. And you seem to indicate, don't judge us by what's happening now. I'm in it for the long haul. But in Iowa, what kind of a showing do you have to, are you saying you don't have to make a really good showing in Iowa because I've got these other states and I'm going to do well? It's a sprint. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon.
I think we're going to do well in Iowa, to be honest with you. And we have a great organization here, for sure. I mean, we have more public supporters than any campaign.
Where are you predicting that you...
I'm not going to predict anything. That's a dangerous, that's quicksand.
Yes.
And I'm not the right person to do that. I'm a candidate. I go and, you know, I'm being and doing and connecting as best I can with people. We had 3 town hall meetings yesterday, working hard at this, and we're making really good progress here.
So you're saying no matter how I do in Iowa, don't judge me by how I do in Iowa. It's how I'm going to do in the long haul.
No, I didn't say that. I said I'm really doing well here, and I intend to do well in the early states because they have influence on March when the delegates really start adding up. You have the SEC primary, so-called SEC primary, in March 1st, and then March 15th, you have 5 or 6 states, which the majority of which will be winner-take-all. And all of those states are influenced by Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada.
Do you think the nomination will be decided by the voters, or do you think it will be decided by the delegates at the Republican National Convention?
I don't know. It's given the fact that many of these states now have laws of proportionality mm-hmm. that are imposed by the RNC. Whoever came up with that idea may not have thought it through. It could go for a lot longer than what people anticipated. The whole plan apparently was to try to have a nominee be nominated early so that you wouldn't have the dark spot, you know, that happened when Mitt Romney got the nomination and was defined early on by his opponent. And it could be that this will go on longer.
You have campaigned and said you want to be the disruptor in chief, essentially. We have about half a minute left. Name one thing in government that you would like to disrupt.
Career civil service reform in Washington, D.C., lifetime employment for government workers. It's created an inefficient government, an arrogant government, and workers in federal government receive pay and compensation that far exceeds their private sector counterparts. It's just not fair.
Do away with civil service?
Reform it. So that you can fire people for incompetence, lifetime employment protection should not exist in America in the 21st century.
Governor Bush, we're out of time. Thanks so much for making time with us today.
It's a blast.
Thank you. Well, join us for another blast edition of Iowa Press next week, regular times, 7:30 next Friday night and noon on Sunday. I'm Dean Borg, and thanks for joining us today.
Funding for Iowa Press was provided by Friends, the Iowa Public Television Foundation.
I'm a veteran.
I'm a builder.
I'm a volunteer.
I am a teacher.
I'm a banker.
I'm an Iowa banker.
No matter who you are, there is an Iowa banker who is ready to help you get where you want to go. Iowa Bankers, allowing you to discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks.
Iowa Communications Network. ICN's Broadband Matters campaign advocates for access to high-speed broadband in all corners of Iowa, for education, public safety, health care, government, and economic development. Information is available at broadbandmatters.com.
Iowa Community Foundations, an initiative of the Iowa Council of Foundations, connecting donors to the causes and communities they care about, for good, for Iowa, forever. Details at iowacommunityfoundations.org. The Associated General Contractors of Iowa, the public's partner in building Iowa's highway, bridge, and municipal utility infrastructure.
The Arlene McKeever Endowment Fund at the Iowa Public Television Foundation, a fund established to support local programming on Iowa Public Television.